Welcome to the Amaze podcast. Amaze creates free educational videos and resources to help families talk openly, honestly, and less awkwardly about sex, health, relationships, and growing up. Our goal is to help you become an askable parent so your kids trust that you're their go-to for honest, non-judgmental information. In today's episode, you'll hear from an incredible parent-teen duo. Sexuality educator Dr. Logan Levkoff and her son Maverick joined me for an amazing conversation on how to normalize sex ed conversations at home. We talk about how Logan's work in sexuality education has evolved since becoming a parent, the earliest sex ed conversations Logan and Maverick had together, key concerns that tweens and teens have about sex ed, and more. It's a conversation that is sure to inspire on a number of levels. Let's have a listen.
I am Christine Coe, your host, and I'm here with the dynamic duo, Logan and Maverick. I'm thrilled to talk to you two because you are super inspiring, like super fun people, and also just incredibly awesome in the work you do. So actually, I would love to start for you to introduce yourselves. I don't know who wants to start, but just kind of like you both have such, you know, an interesting history and what you're doing in this work. So take it away.
You want to start?
Sure. Hi, I'm Maverick. I use he, him pronouns, and I am a ninth grader in high school.
And you're doing some work with Amaze. I'll ask you about it later,
yes. I'm part of the Youth Amaze Ambassador Program.
Yeah. And you play hockey. This I learned just before the broadcast.
A lot of hockey. That's for sure. I am Logan Levkoff. I use she, her pronouns. I am a sexuality educator, and I spend a lot of time working with young people of all ages, demographics, abilities, and parents. My personal passion is the dynamic between parents and caregivers and young people. And I started in this field actually when I was Maverick's age, when I was a peer HIV and AIDS educator when I was in high school. So,
wow.
I mean, so this could be a career for you. Who knows?
You never know. And then you have a PhD. So what is your degree in?
So I did a master's and PhD in human sexuality education. My specialization was human sexuality, marriage, and family life education. So I am a tried and true educator. I'm not a therapist. I'm not a psychologist. I don't do clinical work. I am very much in the trenches working directly with students of all ages. Clearly, I have my own sex ed guinea pigs at home. So, you know, age zero up through age 94.
I love it. That is amazing. So, you know, I think it's probably unusual. It's not most parents in families, you know, where you have somebody who is so well-versed in, you know, having conversations at home. I bet it's probably, you know, even I'm not officially, like, actually in my next life, I would like to be a sex educator, but right now I'm not, but still I have a lot of conversations with my kids, and I think it's probably a somewhat unusual level. And that is probably really unusual for you guys. So I would love to hear a little bit about, Logan, how your work in education and sexuality has really shaped your conversations at home. And specifically, actually, I'm curious about if there's anything that has surprised you, like topics that you thought would be hard that were easy or vice versa, or, you know, anything like that. I'm so curious about a window into what that experience is like for you guys.
You know, I was teaching for years before having children of my own, which offered me this really interesting lens into child rearing, but also into how I was seeing my students after, you know, living with young people in my home too. You know, I don't think that anything, I mean, I hate to say that nothing surprised me, except moments of how certain stereotypical behaviors sort of evolve organically, which is a little bit, you know, shocking and surprising. But, you know, I always say when, in particular, when I work with parents and caregivers, that there is nothing that I tell the adults that I work with that I don't practice in my own home. So everything that I say, everything that I encourage people to do, the tips, the skills, the language, you know, nothing is done or said hypocritically. My kids get it all. They've heard it all. It's been tested on them many, many, many times.
Many times.
Many times. So I think that it's, I think the one thing that, maybe changed a bit was I loved when I started in this field, I really wanted to deal with adult subjects and work with young adults where I could be really unapologetic in how I talked about pleasure and intimacy. And I very much still do that. But until I was working with young people, and then helping to raise them myself, I had this unbelievable passion to change the generational conversations about sex and sexuality. So I think that, that's the piece that was surprising for me, how all of a sudden my passion shifted to a totally different population.
Yeah, that, I mean, yes, absolutely. That it everything changed, your lens on everything changes when you're actually in the field, right? And do you remember actually what one of the first topics, Logan, I'm going to ask the same of you, Maverick, but do you remember what one of the first things you tackled with either of your kids was?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think that we really don't always give ourselves enough credit for having conversations about sex and sexuality with young people. I mean, we do it all the time. So, you know, ever since my kids were born, using words like penis, testicles, vulva, vagina, clitoris, talking about the fact that, may I share your favorite color?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. You know, Maverick's favorite color since he was a little boy has been hot pink, and he had this long hair. And so we were talking about norms and how norms really don't mean anything and that norms change from culture to culture. So I don't think there's ever been a time where I haven't been talking about these issues. Maverick's always had friends with two dads or two moms or single parents or being raised by step parents. And so all these amazing different family structures have always been a part of the conversations we've had. So I can't pinpoint one because I think it's all of the above.
Yeah, it is kind of, you know, it's occurred to me several times in just different conversations I've had over the years that we are kind of living in an incredible time. I mean, the vocabulary is changing, our like mind and openness to things is changing. And it's really awesome. Like the conversations that we have in our families now are just so different than what they used to be. It's mind blowing. Now, Maverick, I did ask about putting you on the spot on this before, and I got your consent. Consent is very important. So I'm going to ask you, since you consented, if you remember one of your earliest sex ed conversations with your mom, and like what topic was it, and was it weird or was it cool, or like what happened?
Well, I do definitely do remember it. It was, I don't know how old I was.
Three.
And I think either I heard someone talk mom talking about it earlier that day. Maybe I was just curious. And I said, what ingredients make a baby? And she said, well, sperm and egg. That was the first part. That was the first sex education related discussion we had ever had.
That's true. In the kitchen.
Amazing. Yeah.
And then there was another one a couple years later, after my sister was born, and my mom was going, she was teaching later that day, and she had a bunch of condoms on the floor wrapped up that she was gonna just talk about in class. And I said, hey mom, are you giving out prizes today in school? And she said, no, those are not prizes, those are condoms. We talked about it and
we opened them.
Open them, yes. Learn how to use them. So yeah, it was pretty cool.
That's amazing.
So I think they are prizes, right? I mean, it's
they are. I mean, they are.
Sexual responsibility. Yeah.
They are. Well, I want to loop back to your first example, which I love. Like I've actually never heard somebody like a kid sort of positioned it as like the ingredients to make a baby, which I think is just like so perfect. But, you know, your mom said, okay, you need a sperm and an egg. And I just want to point out that, like, that is so simple. And I imagine the conversation probably didn't go a ton further, because I just want to underscore that I think a lot of parents get really wound up about feeling like they have to go into this big thing and they have to talk for a long time. And I imagine, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but was it a pretty short, simple, and did it go much farther after that? Or was that it?
I mean, I remember, it's like, you know, all this stuff is like the sex ed Olympics for me. You know, I usually like document it immediately, and so that I have it written down. You know, two things. Your comment about the ingredients piece is actually, I felt the same way. And it's why every time I teach reproduction and the creation of pregnancies, I structure it now as a recipe because mm-hmm. of fabric, because I was so blown away by how simple the concept of ingredients were, and that you could think of it as a recipe with certain tools. It made it not about sex or gender. It made it about mixing certain things together in certain places. And you know, and there were a few different ways to do that. And I love that. And that's been the template for how I teach reproduction now. And honestly, the most exciting thing about not just teaching it, but talking to young people about it in the 21st century is that there's so many different ways to create pregnancies, and it's not limited to what body parts someone has or what someone's sexual orientation is. So I love that piece of it. But you're right. I said, you know, sperm and egg. I said, you know, it just so happens that, you know, if you are assigned male, and we had talked a little bit about, you know, very simple in terms of bodies, what that meant, you know, you have sperm, and, you know, if you have a vulva and vagina and uterus, you have eggs. And so I remember you looked at me, you were three, and you said, I have sperm. And I said, not yet. Okay, yes, not yet. And I said, do you want to know how sperm and egg meet? And he said, nope. I said, okay. That was it.
Perfect.
I mean, you know, and then there were many other conversations after, but
right.
yeah, sitting in the kitchen, just, you know, ingredients.
I know. Yeah, I think that's awesome. And like, how, that's cool. Maverick, I don't know if you knew that before, but like the idea that like little conversation snippet, you know, became like the catalyst for, you know, curriculum. Like that's pretty rad. all right. So I am curious to hear from both of you. You know, obviously your lenses are going to be different. You're on different sides of the aisle, like as far as the populations, but, you know, I think we all think about the things that, you know, teens and tweens might be talking about, but like, what are the key concerns? So like, Logan, like what are the big concerns that, you know, parents are coming to you with, or educators, what's going on in your circles? And Maverick, like, what are the young people talking about? Like, what are they actually really concerned about right now?
Well, there are a couple of things that I've heard people talking about and throughout my high school. And a huge part of it is, when will I be ready to have sex?
Mm.
And what will that be like? And basically, how will I know when when the time is right? So that is something that's one of the things that I feel that is not talked about as much as it should be, which is extremely important. And also the concept of, how do I deal with the pressure, with the peer pressure of having sex, either as like an 11th or 12th grader, or like as you're finishing up high school, when is the right time, and how to deal with that pressure from the students?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so, I mean, a lot of things happen, yeah. Right? I mean, those concerns are universal, right? When is the, how will I know when I'm ready? And I often tell my adult groups that I work with, I say, how many of you have told your young people that they should wait to have, you know, any type of sex, right? Because sex is certainly not just penises and vaginas, that, you know, wait until you're ready. And like the whole group raises their hand. I said, well, that's great. How many of you have told your kids what it means to be ready, or given them the tools to evaluate what it means to be ready? And then there are like a few hands.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, you know, for me, it's always about, how do we teach skills, negotiation skills? How do we find our voice? For me, my biggest concern as an educator, and I think it's truly the reason I get out of bed every morning, is to deconstruct the traditional double standard. I feel like every single sexual health issue that we have pretty much globally comes from this idea that, depending on how you were assigned or how you identify or express yourself, the rules are different when it comes to sex. which has some pretty significant health outcomes, right? Mm-hmm. Not just, you know, lack of a speak up about protection and contraception, but lack of access to reproductive health and abortion services, STI testing, and then, of course, the whole missing discourse about pleasure and how do we speak up about what we want and what feels good. So I think that that's a big piece of it. And certainly in our world, you know, we talk about consent a lot, and it's something that we model at home, we model at school. But it's not enough to just talk about consent without breaking down why we have trouble communicating about sex in the first place, which comes from all of those silly old expectations we have about one another mm-hmm. and what we're each entitled to have. So yeah. It's really hard to talk about consent without breaking down all of those old paradigms that really have not served us well.
So Maverick, I have, you know, I want you to be honest, I'm putting you on the spot again, but I'm so curious about how your experience has been on the Amaze Youth Ambassador team. Like from the outside, I've just been watching it happen and it's looked really cool and kind of awesome. And I keep thinking to myself, wow, these kids are going to have amazing things to put on their college resumes. But I'm so curious, you know, from your perspective, how is it going? Has there been anything like interesting or unexpected that has happened from the partnership?
It's really been an incredible experience so far. It's one of the things I'm most happy about doing it is that you get to meet so many people from all over the country who have the same ideas, who have similar ideas of you to spread and share the knowledge of sex and sexuality. And the people who I meet are also super comfortable talking about it, which is really what I've been waiting for a long time, is to meet a group of people who are comfortable talking about these subjects and who don't like laugh about it or turn it down or change the subject. I'm really happy about that. That's probably the big thing for me.
Oh, that's so cool. Yeah. I mean, and it's really like, it's just the idea that you guys are, I think that idea of tribe is obviously huge, you know, especially for teens. And then also like the idea that you're helping to shape things as they go along is really, really cool. So I'm psyched that you're a part of it and that through this, I've been able to meet you. So I'm curious, you know, obviously you guys are like kind of like leveled up level of having conversations at home, but I would love for both of you to share if you have any thoughts of like, kind of like just maybe like a tactical tip or two for how to normalize these conversations at home, because, you know, the three of us are talking, we're into it. We're like, yeah, no problem. Just be really basic. But like, you know, there are a lot of parents, and I'm sure Logan, you deal with them all the time, who are just super daunted and overwhelmed. So, you know, I just would love some of, you know, your key thoughts on that.
Yeah, absolutely. So there are a few things. I think one of the reasons we have so many challenges talking about these issues is because oftentimes we didn't have role models for having these conversations. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the challenges. The second is, I mean, we talked about it, the expansiveness of language as it relates to gender, you know, changing different types of contraceptive options and protection. You know, there's so much now that I think that we as adults, if we're not in the trenches, we freak out that we don't have all of the answers. And then we actually have to admit to our young people, we don't have the answers and we don't know how to look. So I think that that also prevents us sometimes from having these conversations. And then, of course, there are two other things, one of which I think is, you know, sometimes we have experiences, non-consensual or traumatic experiences growing up that really make these conversations with our young people difficult. Mm-hmm. And I say that it is absolutely okay to have a proxy, to have some other adult figure in your life that you respect and trust and who adores your young people and your young people respect, to help you navigate these conversations, because they can be tough. And you know, the last piece of it is, and I always want to remind parents and caregivers, how would your world have looked if your families had given you different information, right? How would your life have been different? How would the choices you've made been different? How would your sexual health have been different? How would pleasure and function been different? And even the structure of your relationship. So I think that when we give ourselves the freedom to ask those questions and really think about them, then it gives us the motivation for actually sitting down and having lots of little conversations. And I get it. Like we, I think you can admit we're not like the norm, right? We have these conversations at the dinner table, on the subway, like this is all the time. All the time, right? Everywhere. Like there's never not been a...
We'll be walking across the street or something with and a question will just pop up either in my head or my sister's head, mm-hmm. and we'll just ask my mom. Yeah, she'll be like, all right, here's the answer. We'll be like, okay, cool.
And I think that's part of it, right? I mean, it's if young people are asking questions, they deserve answers. It always strikes me as odd that sexuality and is such a key component of who we are throughout our lives, but we mm-hmm. other it and taboo, shameful subject. It makes it really, I think it's really sad. And the last thing I would say, and then I'll turn it over to Maverick to see how young people can make conversations at home more comfortable. But I'm told a lot by people, you know, my kids don't want to hear it from me. They know everything already. And my answer is always, they may not admit it, but they do want to hear it from you because we help shape values and decisions. Mm-hmm. But more importantly, my strategy for parents is always, sometimes you just have to say, I know you think you know everything. Maybe you do know everything, but it's too bad. We're going to have this conversation because when I signed up to be a parent or a caregiver, I made certain promises that there were things I was going to teach you, things mm-hmm. I was going to tell you to help you become, you know, an empowered, fulfilled human being. So this is for me. It's not about you. You can just sit and listen. It's about me. I need to know mm-hmm. I've done my job. And it's, I mean, I think that'd be really hard to say, like, roll your eyes at, right?
No, yeah, definitely.
Maverick, did you have thoughts to share on that or additional ones on?
There's some, definitely it's really important for parents and even teachers to discuss these topics with either their children or their students, because in some places, a lot of the time talking about this is really spent on stress and mindfulness.
Practice, in health classes.
In health class,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
In health is like mindfulness and stress. But it's really that the stress is coming from the person, the student exploring their sexuality and really finding out who they are and either who they're attracted to, how they want to identify, how they want to express themselves. And that really, in some classes, don't take the amount of time necessary to talk about those, which is a downside to the whole health class part. Which really, that's what the kids want to know. They want to learn about their.
They want to know if pornography is real.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Well, so I need to underscore two things, one from each of you. And I apologize, my chair is a little squeaky here. First, okay. Logan, I think this is the first time I have ever heard, and I've talked to a lot of educators over the last, like, the years that I've been working with Amaze and just in, you know, in the online parenting space. But you said something that is the first time I've ever heard giving voice to the idea that triggering information is one of the things that can get in the way of these conversations. And I just want to draw a couple lines under that, especially given the headlines that we're seeing, you know, right now. I think that is huge. And the idea that if you are like in that space where something is making it really, really legitimately hard, it's not just that it's awkward, it's that there's something going on, to get help to do that. I think that's amazing. And then Maverick, the thing I wanted to like draw some lines under is on what you said was this idea of the fact that, you know, sex ed classes or health classes will talk about stress and mindfulness, but that absolute connection between stress and like whether or not you feel like you can express yourself fully as a human being, not like being confused about sexuality. This is like, I don't know, I'm kind of like, I think those two things are huge things that are just not really talked about. So I like, bravo. I mean, that's really amazing. It's good stuff.
Thanks. Yeah.
So
yes, it's really, yeah, definitely there needs to be more about sex and sexuality in schools, because this is really this is what every student's going to remember, is how is what they're going to learn in sex ed class or health class. And a part of that is what they're going to take forward if they don't talk about it at home, or they're getting different from like different kinds of information from friends or sources of or unknown sources. It's really like this is the time to give them the right information and to allow them to explore themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, sex ed is a human rights issue, right? I mean,
it is.
Understanding who you are, how you fit in the world, how you develop, and your right to have a voice and to pleasure and to control reproduction and timing and fertility. I mean, it's just, you know, it's a fundamental right. And I think the earlier we encourage conversations about that, the better we are.
Well, so we're actually coming to, you know, one of the last questions. I have to keep an eye on the time because I know you guys probably need to eat dinner and go to hockey. But I would love, Logan and Maverick, feel free to chime in. You know, we've been talking about, you know, sex ed in schools. We hear from so many parents, like, how meh school sex ed is. So what do you think that parents and students can do to advocate for better sex ed in schools?
I think that parent voices are so crucial. I mean, look, I work in a lot of schools and have the privilege to be in a lot of places that allow me to come in, say what I want to say, you know, work with parents and work with faculty to create these dialogues. And I'm very lucky. And I recognize that not everyone has that opportunity. But I think parents need to know, and it requires some research, what your school board is doing about sex ed. Is it shame-based or abstinence-only based? Is it comprehensive? Is it focused on rights? Is it diverse and equitable? You know, and if it isn't, then, you know, this is the time to get out there and fight for what is right and what is fair. But oftentimes people don't know. Oftentimes people think if they get like the permission slip home that says we're talking about health, that they're talking about it in a way that you'll be okay with. And I'm sad to inform many people that oftentimes that is not the case. You have to really do your research and then get out there and like fight.
Well, I think it starts with the question from the child asking, having their own questions, which will lead to the rest of the parents talking about it and the school either adding or changing their curriculum of sex ed. So I think it definitely starts with the person who wants to learn, definitely starts with them.
Yeah, and getting their friends together, right? To start to, I mean, maybe it's a matter of starting a club where you're demanding information. I mean, there's so much power, not just that comes from the parent caregiver side, but when youth demand things, they have a huge amount of power.
Yes. I mean, I've seen in my city from everything from like implementing crosswalks to whatever else, like, you know, when the kids get together and go to City Hall, like, stuff happens. It's really amazing. So we need to close things out, but I just wanted to give you an opportunity. Is there any, you know, any final thoughts that you wanted to share on this broadcast before we sign off?
I would say it doesn't matter what's happened before. It doesn't matter what you've said or haven't said or missed opportunities. What matters with our young people is what you do right now. So if you've seen this and it gives you motivation to sit down with your kids in a very like humble way and say, you know what? It occurs to me that there's some conversations we haven't had that's on me and I need to do a better job. And I'm here to help you navigate these things just to lay the groundwork. And again, you know, admit when you don't have an answer. It's okay. I mean, make sure you find the answer and give it to them. But, you know, you're never going to get it right all the time. And that's okay. We're human beings. And I think this is one of those topics that we're so afraid to admit that we don't have all of the answers. Whereas, you know, if it's calculus, we're like, I don't know. You know, I don't know it. So, and that's okay. But that humility and that honesty and candidness goes such a long way. So I encourage everyone to get outside their comfort zone.
Of course. And that starts with, if you're a parent, normalizing it at an early age, like with what you did with me from the very beginning, being open and discussing these issues is the first step towards this entire process of it, really.
But admittedly, he really didn't have a choice. So
yeah. And really, if you're on East Coast time, like it's dinner time. So it's like the perfect time to have one of these conversations. Thank you, Logan and Maverick,
Thank
so much
you.
For taking time at the end of a busy day. Take care.
Thank you.
All right, bye.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. To find more free educational resources from Amaze, including videos, book recommendations, conversational scripts, and more, visit amaze.org. You can also connect with us on YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram at Amaze Parents, and on Twitter at amaze.org. And we'd be so grateful if you would leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. Thanks for listening.